Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Mark Cunyon is CEO of Purpose Link Consulting. Prior to PLC, Mark enjoyed a 27-year career with three major pharmaceutical companies focusing on human and animal health products. Most of that time was spent at Merck, where he held a number of positions, including Executive Director of Marketing for Europe and Vice President Asia Pacific Region. Elena Love is President of Purpose Link, and prior to founding PLC, spent more than 12 years at Merck, where she was Executive Director of Human Resources Worldwide. She was a research scientist and clinical researcher. She's also a BusinessWeek.com management consultant. They are authors of a book entitled The Purpose Linked Organization. Welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about a purpose-linked organization, the relationships that companies or leaders or managers need to have with their employees. What do most people want in an employer?
Today, people would probably tell you they want some stability, a good paying job they can count on, because things have been very, very difficult. But I think, in part, what people are looking for in an employer are respect and appreciation for the contributions they can make to the organization and an opportunity to make those contributions, a degree of autonomy in their work. And what we're seeing a lot of now is the desire to experience employers who have a stable management vision and passionate leaders heading up those organizations.
Fundamentally, what people need is to be known for who they are, to be measured fairly, and to feel relevant. And you need all three, and you'll be surprised how often that's not the case.
I wouldn't be surprised at all in these times, especially when people aren't perceived as people anymore. They're cost items that need to be cut from budgets. The idea of a humanistic relationship right now, when it theoretically should matter most, many companies are missing that type of relationship.
I agree. And I also feel that organizations going forward, after the economy starts to correct a little bit and a little of the drama dies down, are really going to struggle significantly.
People will remember how they were treated.
People will have long memories about this particular recession and its impact because it has been so broad, so long, and so deep. Based on the research we've done, we're starting to see what we're calling a real confluence of self-actualization happening on both ends of the generational spectrum in the workforce. You've got baby boomers who have found themselves in a situation as a result of the economic environment where they're not going to retire when they thought they were going to. So they're looking at even more years ahead for work. And they're reaching a point in their lives, many of them, where they're looking back on what they've done and they're thinking to themselves, is this all there is? What am I going to do now? What's next? And how am I going to do something that gives me a sense of fulfillment and makes me feel like I'm going to leave a positive legacy?
Right.
On the other end of the generational spectrum, you have younger individuals in the workforce who have been raised by parents who have said to them, you really should look for something that you love and make that your career. So they've come into the workforce with this idea in mind that they're going to find their passion and they're going to build their lives around it. And if it's not with your company, then it will be somewhere else. So we have this tension happening on both ends of the generational spectrum inside the work environment. Pile on that, this recession we've just come through. And of course, job numbers lag what happens in the economy. So we still have people struggling inside organizations to retain their jobs and others struggling to get new jobs. So I think you've got quite a bit of a groundswell of things going on inside organizations that they're going to have to pay attention to.
Okay. You're using all these emotional terms, confident, respect, having your own identity.
That's because we believe a little more in a culture of being than in a culture of doing.
Right.
But going back to the notion of confidence, employees also need to be able to trust the company. Also, they have to be excited about what they're able to do. This notion of trust, confidence, and excitement is really what makes the work environment fulfilling. Now, for that to happen, you have to have a leadership in that company that operate at the intersect of a very sound value system, unique skills, and passion. Passion is often what's missing.
Right.
Often authors and other people have been looking for a definition of charisma. To us, charisma is passion. Passion is very contagious. So when your leader is passionate, you tend to be excited yourself.
It's that bright light you're attracted to.
We actually think it's the next competitive edge that organizations are looking for. You can take two organizations where all other things are equal. They have the same qualities in their people. They're marketing the same products. They're operating in the same market. In our opinion, the one that will win hands down every time is the one that figures out how to leverage the passions of their employees and apply those to the work that needs to get done inside the organization. So when you say we talk about these things from an emotional perspective, we absolutely do. Because the last time I checked, corporations were a legal entity. It was really the people that made them run and hum. So if you cannot figure out how to harness all that each individual brings to the party every day, then you're losing.
Well, you've actually developed a tool which you call the Passion Profiler that identifies and measures employee passions. Can you explain how a few of those passions relate to one's work?
Let me back up a little bit from this notion of passion.
Okay.
And go to something that's a little more esoteric, and that's the notion of individual purpose, because there is a correlation between the two. When people who have been in leadership positions look at individuals we are trying to hire and motivate and retain and engage in the work of the organization, we intuitively know that if we can build a deeper connection between what that person feels their purpose is and the work we give them to do, that's a smart move to make.
Of course.
What we always have a difficult time in identifying and understanding is what that purpose is. And very often people have a difficult time articulating what their purpose is. But if we are able to identify and measure what we feel are the external manifestations of purpose, the passions people exhibit, then we're on to something. Then we have a tool we can use as leaders, as managers, to figure out how do I best engage this individual? What's the kind of work or role that's going to really resonate not only with their skills, but also with their passions?
Uh-huh.
So what we've done is through our research, come up with a tool that is able to do that. We worked with a team from the University of Michigan to validate and test this tool, and it's been now through thousands of people. What the instrument basically does is identify how one measures against 10 specific archetypes of passion. And those archetypes are things like the builder, the transformer, the healer, the connector, the conceiver, and so on. Each of those archetypes has very specific ways in which they behave in the organization, in the work setting, very specific strengths they carry, very specific vulnerabilities they could suffer from if not aware of them. And there are certain ways in which you lead and manage people with each of those archetypes.
Right.
What the tool does is focus on the top three someone carries, because people are not one thing. We're really a mosaic. And when we can identify your top three, we have a key into your passion DNA, so to speak.
What we see often when we use the Passion Profiler with a company is that at the very minimum, when people are come out of the workshop, having used the Passion Profiler and having been debriefed about their own results, immediately the quality of the conversation is changing in the company. And that's very critical for us, because in a sound environment, what you need is for people to be very clear about what they feel, how they feel, and what they want. That kind of a conversation doesn't happen very often, or it does, but very superficially. And managers tend to maybe listen, but not hear. So that instrument and its impact on the company or on a team is immediate in terms of the quality of the conversation. When you're in an environment where people are clear about the purity of their motives and the integrity of their actions, and you add to that good conversation about how they feel and what they want, you create an environment that's very, very fulfilling for people.
Now, this has to be done within the constraints of what the company does for a business.
Absolutely. But you'd be surprised. Some individuals will say, what will happen if we give this tool to our employees or have our employees read this book? What if they discover they don't really like their jobs and they all decide to leave?
Okay.
What is actually true in our experience is the contrary. I believe that if you don't pay attention to the whole of the individual, the skill and the passion and the values, you are going to risk losing them anyway. Because people long enough in a role where they're living a quiet life of desperation inside the organization, at some point, they're going to make a different decision just for survival. But the reality is, when we use this tool with individuals and with teams, what we generally find is that people realize, I've had this opportunity in the work I'm already doing to express this passion. I just haven't realized right. I've had that opportunity, and now I can do more of it. We see teams shifting the way in which they use the attributes each person brings to that team. So instead of labeling them, for example, if you happen to be the financial person on the team, the only thing we're going to come to you with when we have strategic issues is something that relates to finance. When in fact, we may find that you have a huge conceiver passion that will allow you to think about strategic issues way outside the box with a mind that works like a spider diagram, and the rest of us are all trying to catch up with how your thought patterns are working, but at the same time, you're coming up with fantastic ideas that we've never tapped into. So what it does is really change the tonality of the conversation in the organization and the ways in which people view one another and their ability to contribute to the business.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. When we do workshops, the first portion of the day is spent looking at yourself and your team, but the rest of the day is spent looking at strategic issues, business issues. How do we take what we now know about ourselves and what we now know about this team and use this to make better decisions right. about the strategic challenges we're up against? And we can actually show in those workshops that the quality of the solution is vastly improved when you add into the equation, not just what are the skills we're going to need to solve this, but mm-hmm. what are the passions of the people we have and how can we use them more effectively?
Mark, it strikes me that you're really, really emphasizing the need for almost an inspirational type of leader. Can you give us some examples of people like that?
One name that comes to mind is Richard Branson from Virgin Atlantic. I think his whole demeanor is interest outside the scope of his company sure. for the environment. The way he connects with younger people, he would be on my list of inspirational leaders. So would probably be Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, let's say a company has not bought into the PLC methodology, but you have one true believer within a company who is managing a team of 8 or 9 people, and they want to create an environment within their little unit that nurtures these employees and can help them. What would you recommend to this manager?
I would definitely start with putting people through the tool.
Right.
What's really important is the feedback that comes with the instrument and the ability then to use that as the platform for changing the conversation, as we've talked about earlier, among the team and looking at, are we making the best use of what you have to contribute to this organization or not? What have you learned since joining us that we're not capitalizing
right.
on, that we should be capitalizing on? As you look at your future, where do you see yourself making the best contribution here in the organization? And of all the things that you do for us, what do you find most fulfilling? Most managers who are aware and watching their employees can see when that spark gets lit. They can see when that fire is burning, when that person is really interested in what they're doing. And the key there is to just feed them more and more and
right.
more of that.
Right. Where's the tool available?
The tool's available by contacting us. The website is www.thepurposelink.com. Individuals who purchase our book, The Purpose Linked Organization, will see when they receive that book that there's a code inside the book to access the tool. It will give them information about their top 3 archetypes.
Mm-hmm. Mark, could you expand on that?
I think the broader question is, how do you transform a company? How do you make a significant impact on the way a company operates? It's not, in our experience, a top-down exercise. Mm-hmm. It's a bottom-up exercise. It's you work somewhere with a local subsidiary and create there a nucleus of people who are receptive to the kind of transformation you want to help them go through. That exposure within the company might lead to a transformation across the company.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
What's really hard to argue is that when leaders do this work with their teams, they see a change in the way the work gets accomplished, the change mm-hmm. in results, better productivity.
Well, you've addressed the whole person. You've addressed their emotional needs, their need to execute on their purpose, mm-hmm. which brings the whole human being into play.
What a novel idea.
Right.
But think about it. All the management systems are really based on skills and expertise, mm-hmm. credentials, experience, not at all on what we're talking about, or mm-hmm. certainly not enough. Now, an example I like to use when people are contemplating a career move is medical students coming out of school. From a skill standpoint, they're all equal.
Right.
Now, the kind of job range they're facing, the options they have, It's all over the place. Because as a doctor, you can work for Doctors Without Borders, the Red Cross. You can work in forensics. You can work for Merck. You can work as a practitioner. What determines what is the right job for you are not only these skills, because right. that you have coming out of school, but what's driving you.
Exactly.
And you have seen, as I have seen as a patient, a difference between a doctor as a processor as opposed to a healer. The healer will feel my pain, will sympathize and be warm and have an eye contact, and I'll feel very comfortable as a patient with that doctor. The processor is the doctor who will approach you with a folder looking at data. It might be an excellent doctor, a very skilled doctor. He might do the right thing, but it's a very different approach the way the patient perceived it. So that example really drives clearly the difference between skills and what we're talking about, which is the passions.
And we don't discount skills, by the way. Skills will always be important. You can't do a great job unless you're skilled to do that job. But what's very interesting is what we find in our work is when we overlay passion onto skill, we get an exponential increase in the way in which that work gets done, the quality of the work that gets done. In addition to that, when you're passionate about something, I don't have to force you to learn a skill. You're really interested in it. You're going to be very self-motivated to learn that skill.
We've been speaking to Mark Cunyon and Elena Love, authors of a book entitled The Purpose-Linked Organization. And I want to thank them both for being our guests today.
Thank you so much.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.